Good morning, everyone. We welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion with the subject of probation after death. So glad you could join us today. We are recording today from the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent in Plainfield, New Jersey, in the United States of America. We welcome you all. We'll start today with our morning prayer.
I'm reading from page 10 of Christian Healing by Mary Baker Eddy, and just a sentence from the Blue Book, page 195. God is all in all. That finishes the question of a good and a bad side to existence. Truth is the real, error is the unreal. You will gather the importance of the saying, when sorrow seems to come, if you will look on the bright side, for sorrow endureth but for the night, and joy cometh with the light. Then will your sorrow be a dream, and your waking the reality, even the triumph of soul over sense. If you wish to be happy, argue with yourself on the side of happiness. Pick the side you wish to carry, and be careful not to talk on both sides or to argue stronger for sorrow than for joy. You are the attorney for the case and will win or lose according to your plea. Probation, progress goes on until there is no life, substance, or intelligence in matter. Mary Baker Eddy.
It's wonderful. Thank you. Okay, Karen.
Watch number 19. Watch lest you endeavor to interpret the Bible with any sense of God being separated from man or operating in the universe except through man. It might even be helpful to declare that man is the expressed activity of God, or God in action, if such a statement would aid one in eliminating any sense that God operates apart from his reflection, man. When the Bible says, "Thus saith the Lord," it means that divine mind was expressed through the demonstration some individual made to voice God. To trust in the Lord means to trust in one's ability to demonstrate God's presence and power. Whenever the Bible speaks of God, if the text involves more than a definition of him, it must include the fact that God is being reflected by man or as man. The Lord is our shepherd through our ability to reflect his protecting presence. Thus the Lord must mean the ever-presence of divine love, demonstrated or reflected by man.
Thank you. All right, comments on that?
Well, wow. That was one of the things. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying that it's a most amazing watching point. That really puts everything in its place, doesn't it?
Mm. Yes.
Yes, it does.
Just in our obligation and our responsibility to see and know who we are and to be it and do it.
Thank you.
Could I add something?
Yes.
It's very seamless, both readings, the morning prayer and the watch. It really works together as if both have planned it together. It was really beautiful. So thank you.
Yeah, it does.
Well, this is what I have come to, since being here, have grown so much in, is trusting my ability to demonstrate God's presence and power. And I've just been so grateful for that growth in knowing that, and that you can't, you know, any more than you can then man can be separated from an action that he's doing, you know, one is doing. You can't separate God from being what he's doing, or that it's so seamless. It's just so one. There's just an impossibility to interfere with that. And that's just such a comforting, healing thought.
Thank you very much.
I'm very grateful to know that we are not separate from God. Growing up in California, we went to different Christian churches, and I got a sense that God was far away. And then through the years, he just felt like further and further away. So coming here and having all that corrected has been just wonderful.
Thank you. All right. Yes, this idea of our oneness is so important to live our day, to choose you, choose ye each day whom you're going to serve, the one God, obeying his voice, his commands, which is your consciousness when you're listening, or are you going to listen to the serpent talk? And very important. So thank you. And again, that we're not God. But God expresses himself through us. That's awesome. That was a story Mrs. Evans would tell us when she went to see her practitioner, Mr. Davidson, in New York City. They used to have office hours. And he was referring to a citation in Science and Health, which I don't have it to hand, but anyway. After he read it and they thought about it, that was the conclusion, that you're not God, but God expresses himself through you. And Mrs. Evans said she just left that place walking on air. And I think that's the way I felt, too, the first time I read Bicknell Young's article, Oneness, where he says the same thing. We're not appealing to a God afar off. He is our very consciousness. We're good because God is good. We're loving because God is love, and all of that, it's that oneness. So very important that we know that and keep it with us during the day.
One thing, if I could add just one little thing, on page 51 in the blue book is a very small statement, but she says, take time each day to say what is the most powerful thing in the world. It is God saying, I am, in his own creation.
Thank you. Yes. All right, Jeremy, the golden text, probation after death.
Romans. Neither death, nor life, nor angels, nor principalities, nor powers, nor things present, nor things to come, shall be able to separate us from the love of God.
It's a beautiful, beautiful golden text for this lesson. And I think we'll start again with Nancy, what she found Mrs. Eddy said about probation after death and prose works.
Yes, good morning. I found in No and Yes, surely the probation of mortals must go on after the change called death, that they may learn the definition of immortal being, or else their present mistakes would extinguish human existence. How long this false sense remains after the transition called death, no mortal knoweth, but this is sure, that the mists of error sooner or later will melt in the fervent heat of suffering. Mortality will burst the barriers of sense, and man be found perfect and eternal. In miscellaneous writings, man's probation after death is a necessity of immortality, for good dies not, and evil is self-destructive. Therefore, evil must be mortal and self-destroyed. If man should not progress after death, but should remain in error, he would be inevitably self-annihilated. Those upon whom the second death hath no power are those who progress here and hereafter out of evil. their mortal element and into good that is immortal, thus laying off the material beliefs that war against spirit and putting on the spiritual elements in divine science. And then from Miscellany, and Florence mentioned this in her testimony Wednesday, the article, short article from Mrs. Eddy, there is no death. A suppositional gust of evil in this evil world is the dark hour that precedes the dawn. This gust blows away the baubles of belief, for there is in reality no evil, no disease, no death, and the Christian Scientist who believes that he dies gains a rich blessing of disbelief in death and a higher realization of heaven. My beloved Edward A. Kimball, whose clear, correct teaching of Christian Science has been and is an inspiration to the whole field, is here now as veritably as when he visited me a year ago. If we would awaken to this recognition, we should see him here and realize that he never died, thus demonstrating the fundamental truth of Christian Science. And then a few sentences from the article by Herbert Eustace. There is no law of death. As the Christian Scientist, you know that there is no law of death. Why then bow down to the suggestion of such a law? The only law of death there is the law of life, which is the law of death to everything unlike itself. I thought that summed it up.
Thank you. Very, very beautiful. Everything is in Mrs. Eddy's works. We can find all the answers. And this is, why wait for death, or why think death is going to bring some great blessing? Work out your salvation here and now. There is no death. There just isn't. So why not do it now and learn what you need to learn? So that was beautiful. And, you know, in the lesson in Science and Health, Mrs. Eddy says Jesus demonstrated healing this, that life is eternal by raising the dead and dying. And then when man gives up his belief in death, he will advance more rapidly towards God, life, and love. And that is what, you know, we are going to talk about today and work at, because that's a big bugaboo. Oh my gosh, you're going to die, or you're going to get sick and die, or this or that. Who says that? The hell you say? Did God tell you that? Did God say, oh, you're going to get sick and die? I don't think he said that. I don't believe that came from God. So who the heck is saying that to you? The error, and you better not be listening to error.
Yeah, God didn't see his creation and call it very good and said, enjoy it while it lasts.
Right. That's it. So we've read this before, but I'm going to have Gary read it again because it's so beautiful. It's entitled, There Is No Death. And it was a letter sent to Herbert Eustace from one of his students. I think the student was Mildred Bean, who was his secretary. And we found this in the box of things that were given to us by the Herbert Eustace Foundation, which we were very honored to receive. So go ahead.
She writes, shortly before the passing of my husband, I had a strange but precious experience I would like to relate. I had gone out and was driving my car when, without any apparent reason, I made a complete U-turn in the middle of a block and returned home. I rushed in the door, and there I found my husband sitting in his chair, lifeless. I mentally uttered the statement, "Dear God, what should I do now?" I looked through the doorway out into the garden, and as I did so, I was reminded of the statement, "There is no death." I noticed then my husband's eyelashes began to move. He sat up, and I helped him into the kitchen. I prepared him some lunch, and when we sat down, he put his hand on mine and said, "Dear, do you know what happened?" Of course, I was speechless because I knew something tremendous was going on. Then he said, "There is no death, and I have proven it by coming back and telling you so." He told me when he realized he had made the change, his one thought was, "I must go back and tell you what has happened." Then he said, "When you came in and found me on the chair, you said, 'God, what shall I do now?' I tried to tell you, 'Here I am,' but you looked right through me, and then I knew the only way I could prove this to you was by sitting back in my chair." He continued by saying, "This I cannot do again, because I must go and not come again." I asked him, "Will you see your friend D?" He said, "She never left you." And I asked again, "Will you see your mother?" And he replied, "I have already talked with her." Then he tried to tell me how wonderful it was, but I could not understand. He asked me to promise him two things. One was, "Do not grieve, because there is no separation." And the other, "Do not be offended by anyone, for they do not know you as you really are. If they did, they would love you." He ate the lunch I had prepared for him, and shortly after that, quietly finished his course. I found his body in the bathroom, but knew, even before I found him, that he was gone. I have never doubted his ascension. I have never been to the grave or even sent a flower there.
Very precious story. Thank God it was given to us. I haven't seen it anywhere else. And we know, because in I guess, I think it is in Unity of Good where Mrs. Eddy says, you know, if you've lived your life and done, finished your course with joy, so to speak, you've done what God has asked you to do, and it should be a long and happy life. When you're ready to go, you should just walk out with peace. And if otherwise, if you try to do it some other way, well, then that doesn't work. You still have all these lessons to learn. So again, why not do it here and now? It's most important.
I read that article.
Go ahead,
Wendy.
Hi, Wendy.
I read that article before my mom passed on the 14th of this month, and that one article brought me the most comfort, just knowing that you know, he said, "Do not grieve." And it just really, really helped me to get through this process the past few weeks. I shared it with my dad down in Mexico. He's in an assisted living home, and I read it to him, and it's really helped him as well. So I'm so grateful for that article.
Thank you, Wendy. Yes. You know, I don't think there's any of us who hasn't had someone we love go on. It's something that we have to deal with. And in science, we can deal with it in the best way possible. And we can't, everyone would like to, we'd all like to keep us all here on Earth forever, but that's not happening. I mean, we are here forever, but not in this material, so-called material form. But we are here. And Mrs. Eddy says in her chapter on spiritualism that the departed, they pour out their love and their good to us. And we can feel that, and vice versa. But then she says, but era is not communicable. So, and we remember the story too, where Mrs. Eddy said she saw Edward Kimball in the library getting a book. So there is no death. And so for that reason, although I know it's difficult when you seem to have lost someone in the so-called flesh, but it helps us to know there is no death. And we will certainly all be together again sometime.
Well, and Mary, when my husband seemed to have left this world 5 years ago, I felt right away that half the battle was knowing that there is no death. And so I knew that he was fine and he was active and doing stuff and, you know, whatever, and enjoying this new experience that he was having. And that really truly was half the battle, because, you know, then I just knew it was just me I had to take care of, and I know God has taken care of that. And so that was a very helpful thought to me, to just know that he had not died. He might not be in my sight, but he had not died. And it's funny, because I've been so healed of that thought of death that I don't even think of that word die. When someone says it, I replace it in my head with gone on. And I just am not afraid of death, and I didn't have to grieve. And it's just been just such a wonderful demonstration for me.
It's wonderful, Elizabeth. I remember of that time. I think that was the first time we ever heard from you. You came online and gave a testimony about it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, mm-hmm. I remember that.
Yeah. So, thank you. You guys have been such a wonderful strength for me.
Well, we're so grateful for what Jesus and Mrs. Eddy have left for us. Plus all these good workers that we are, you know, we are making sure that what they have given us is not lost. It may be in the archives, but it's now open to the public on our website.
Oh, you guys are getting it out there, that's for sure.
Thank God we've been...
Well, thank God we've been given us. It's been given to us, and it is our mission to make sure that it's available for all mankind. I mean, that this is God's science. God is prospering this science.
Who could see it and hold it back?
Yeah, I know. So as we've talked about, if they didn't put out the New Testament because maybe the wording wasn't quite perfect. Who is speaking?
I was Wendy. I was going to say, I posted that article on my Facebook page, and the number of people that commented on it, how helpful it was to them as well. It was a perfect opportunity to do that and share that with everyone.
Good. Thank you.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
And this is what the internet is for, isn't it?
It is, for this giving of good to everyone. And again, the idea of the immortality, that's helped me so much lately, because we're not born into matter, nor do we die out of it. We've always been with the Father. So when people seem to leave our sight, they're going home. I like, you know, people will say that about so-called death, that they're going home. Well, that is true. You're going home to a familiar place, not to some place you don't know or you've never been to. It is your real home. This is kind of just a temporary home. What does she call it? The
schoolhouse
of earth. Yeah, for a while. But you're going back home. You're going to your father and mother, God, and see all the people and animals and everything else. So it's a going home process, but it must be done at the right time, and not done because you've been disobedient to God in some way. You must fulfill your life purpose. That's very important. And in this beautiful article sent to me by Carrie, and it's referring to the golden text. It's called Steadfastness, but it says, all of the good which divine love gives us is ours for all eternity. Therefore, we can never be deprived of it by any erroneous belief of evil. If error tries to suggest to us that the belief of death has deprived us of some of our dear ones, by turning persistently to the truth, we learn that we have not really lost them at all, but have only lost the false human concept of them. And the godlike quality, which is all that we ever really loved, is still ours to love, and will live on in the true one consciousness throughout all eternity. So ultimately, all we're losing is the personal sense of that person. Yeah. The same truth can be applied when those whom we love seem to be living away from us. And indeed, when any false belief of human limitation tries to separate us from God. We have this assurance from Paul. And here we are. For I am persuaded that neither death, nor life, nor angels, nor principalities, nor powers, nor things present, nor things to come, nor height, nor depth, nor any other creature shall be able to separate us from the love of God, which is in Christ our Lord. We can't ever be separated from God's love. And whatever we loved about a person that we believe has passed on, that is still with us, because that's from God. You can't be separated from it. Personal sense, yes, but not that. So then we'll go to Chardell.
This I started with 246 of the lesson of 27. Life is eternal. We should find this out and begin the demonstration thereof. Life and goodness are immortal. And then I found on our website, From Death Unto Life, and this is by Alfred F. Gilmore. And this is 1924 in a Sentinel. To love is to lift oneself in some degree out of the sense of selfishness. To love one's neighbor as oneself is to recognize the allness of God as infinite love, as to cease all sense of selfishness. See, man's perfect selfhood is the child as the child of God. This necessitates recognition of the perfect man, in itself the true healing process. Our beloved leader thus sets forth the necessity of keeping the commandments, which Jesus called the greatest. On page 340 of Science and Health, in speaking of the need to fear God and keep his commandments, she says, let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Love God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole of man in his image and likeness. End quote. How could our leader have phrased more emphatically the importance of this observance? To love more is the great necessity. Into the mentality filled to overflowing with love for all God's creation, there can enter no slightest suggestion of hatred. Insurance against hate and its untoward result, the belief in death, is found in never ceasing love for the brethren.
It's beautiful. Ever ceasing love for the brethren. When you love, because that, what does Mrs. Eddy say in her hymn? Love alone is life. And when you're loving, there's no death. And we must, as it was started off with Florence's prayer about this love, we must be loving. If we're entertaining any sense of irritation about our brethren or whatever, and holding it within us, if you think they don't feel it, they do feel it, even if you don't say it. We have a responsibility to keep our thoughts clear. And even if you think you're justified in your irritation, resentment, whatever, you're not. You never are, not as a Christian Scientist. And I've told that story where Mrs. Evans went to see her practitioner. This wasn't Mr. Davidson. This was Nana Ritchie. And talking about someone she didn't like. And Mrs. Ritchie, Nana Ritchie, rebuked her for it. And Mrs. Evans said, oh, well, I'm not hating her. I just don't like her. And then Nana Ritchie said, then you're hating her. There's no in between. You're not a little bit pregnant. You're either loving someone or not. And love alone is life. And you crush the life out of yourself and perhaps out of others when you're not loving. You don't have to love the error, but you must love the person. Remember the good in the person. See the good in them. Rise above whatever it is that seems to be irritating you and see the good. And then you can speak to the error with authority, but not because it's them, because it's not them. And it's like a bubble that needs to be popped and burst. But for you to go on and on and on resenting someone is not good. Because as Mrs. Eddy said, hatred is a plague spot, which spreads its virus and what?
Kills the class.
Yes. Not to be indulged in.
And even if the love that you express is not returned for a while, it said, and I, if I be lifted up, will draw all men unto me. It will have an effect. Be patient. It will have an effect. Because love, because you will be living when you are loving. When you are seeing your brother as the image and likeness of God, lift them up.
I have to say, you know, every time we have a visitor, everyone loves Craig because Craig loves them. He expresses such love, tenderness, kindness, no judgment. He'll do anything. He'll walk the extra mile with them. It's his love. It's all that matters, really. And we must all be that bright and loving child of God. In an article, The Love of God, by Ella Hoag, also sent by Carrie, she writes, our dear leader states this in the First Church of Christ Scientists and Miscellany when she tells us, quote, the government of divine love derives its omnipotence from the love it creates in the heart of man. For love is allegiant, and there is no loyalty apart from love, end quote. Thus we find that the love of God has a twofold meaning. It is divine love loving and love loved, or love and man reflecting love. Surely no human sacrifice could be too great, no effort too earnest, no desire too fervent in the purpose to win the goal of divine love's reflection. How certain it is that finding this truth of man's real existence, we shall come to realize, as Paul says, golden text again, neither death nor life nor angels nor principalities nor power nor things present nor things to come nor depth nor any other creature shall be able to separate us from the love of God which is in Christ our Lord. Someone said that this divine love always has met and always will meet every human need. Someone was complaining, well, love isn't meeting my need. And the practitioner said, well, are you loving? Are you being that love? You know, this isn't just pulling a string, divine love meet my need. Divine love does meet your need, but you have to be expressing that divine love. As we talked about, we're one with God. You start the class with that. You're the image of love, Mrs. Eddy says in her definition of recapitulation of man, definition of man. So this love, if you don't have this love in you, then you can't be whining because you think divine love hasn't met your need. You must be that love. And all needs will be met. It's a power.
I think two things. The first, I was surprised that indifference is hate.
Yes.
It's easy to just hide behind indifference and, oh, well, you know, I think you mentioned before, but to that word indifference, as if, oh, it's okay. It's okay. I don't even think of them. But really, it's hate. It's hating.
Thank you.
Interesting. Just fine. Mm-hmm.
There was some kind of study done about that with little infant babies and the ones that were treated indifferently, died.
Mm. Yeah, because what's behind indifference? Oh, it's not my business, right? It's separate from me. It's none of my business.
Am I my brother's keeper?
Yeah.
Exactly. Okay. The other thing that I found out is if you find that you don't feel love, be that love. This is what you just said, Mary, about be the expression of love.
Yes.
Then you will start to feel it. Mm-hmm.
Yes. I've had people come to me with a list of all the things they want their, you know, future husband or something to be. They want him this, that. Well, I say you be those things and maybe you will attract it to you. But yeah, you have to be that love. And you also need to feel complete in God. You can't feel needy like you need somebody, that you're just miserable if you don't have anybody. We all have life, truth, and love. We all have God. Start from there. And when you express that, you will attract a right person if it's right for you to do so. Probably attract a lot of people because people crave it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Be that love.
Mrs. Eddy said, alone, but not lonely.
Exactly. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And this is why it's important to have a gratitude list every day, because you need to be grateful for God's love. You need to be grateful for life, for the opportunities that God gives you to love. You got to be grateful for the truth that love alone is life.
We can't be one with God, but also be incomplete.
That's right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Or ungrateful for Him.
So there was something very beautiful sent called the garment of praise, which goes along with what Gary was saying, how important gratitude is. I loved in the watch that we had the other night. Karen, I'm sorry, I'm skipping. I wanted to get to your contribution, but we've got so much today. Anyway, in this watch message, it said, hold sacredly to your joy, your gratitude. It will keep the door of spiritual revelation open and unfold to your receptive thought, the white Christ light of unselfishness, of joy and activity. For ministry is gratitude and compassion. That is so important. Hold sacredly. And that word means reverence, as of something holy or consecrated to God, in a way considered holy and deserving because of a connection with God. Gratitude connects you with God, true gratitude. If you find yourself in problems, it's because you are not grateful. You haven't been. You've let the serpent whisper, this isn't right. He doesn't like me. I don't like this. I know, I've been there. Joy and gratitude, essential ingredients. So in this article, Garment of Praise, it says, a number of years ago, an earnest student of Christian Science seemed to be passing through severe trials and experiences. And although she worked and studied hard, she could not shake off the heaviness and find healing for a physical condition which had appeared during this trouble. One night, she drove to hear a Christian Science lecture given in a neighboring state. The speaker told how he had spiritualized his thought in Christian Science and how he had received his healing. He had followed the leading in this verse in Proverbs, which is in our lesson this week. In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths. And praise God from morning until night for every experience of good that came to him. He did this day after day until he found his thought completely changed and he was healed. This has happened more times than not. Then just giving gratitude will heal. And it goes along too with it. This is in Mrs. Eddy's article today. I've given it many times, but it is so important. I tell you the truth when I say there is only one source of all good, God. The conscious recognition and acceptance of this fact, acknowledged by every activity of the mind, not two or three times a day, but every few moments all day long, no matter what the outer self is doing, and this maintained, will enable anyone to express his perfect freedom and dominion over all things human. Are you doing that? Are you thanking God and praising God all through your day? choose ye who you will serve. If you do this, you don't have to have some big major problem, especially physical problem, that they believe leads to death. It'll be wiped out because your consciousness is so full of the truth and is so grateful for the good. And then on top of that, I subscribed to a newspaper, and there was this on my phone and also in paper, but there was an article that came yesterday. It was called Gratitude, an Alternative Medicine for Anger and Depression. And it said, this is part one in Virtue Medicine. What medicine is safe, effective, free, and requires only a subtle shift in perspective? We welcome you to explore the neglected link between virtue and health. Now, holy Moses, if that's not the leaven of truth working, and it goes to what Mrs. Eddy says in Miscellaneous Writings 268, the Christian Scientist keeps straight to the course. His whole inquiry and demonstration lie in the line of truth. Hence, he suffers no shipwreck in a starless night on the shoals of vain glory. His medicine is mind, the omnipotent and ever-present good. His help is from the Lord, who heals body and mind, head and heart, changing the affections, enlightening the misguided senses, and curing alike the sin and the mortal sinner. And then this, God's preparation for the sick are potions of his own qualities. His therapeutics are antidotes for the ailments of mortal mind and body. Then let us not adulterate his preparations for the sick with material means. Potions of his own qualities. And what is one of his qualities? It's gratitude. Gratitude is innate within us all. If we're not grateful, we're not in the right mind. We're in the mortal mind. If you're grouncing over anything, and I don't care what it is, you're in the wrong mind and you better get out of it. If you're down on yourself, if you're poor, pitiful pearl, if whatever it is wrong, get out of it. You can't allow it. So this article was just amazing in many ways. It talks about a woman who, well, she had anger problems, and she went to a doctor. She was hoping to get a pill. She had just blown up because one of her, at work, somebody got accepted her proposal for something to do rather than this person's proposal. And she was furious. She blew up at everybody. So she went here hoping to get some pill to calm her down. Yeah. And the doctor said, I'm going to give you something rather unconventional. You were to write a gratitude journal. Does that sound familiar? So she was to write down every night three things that she was grateful for. And she had a lot of doubt about doing this, but she did. She started to write it down, and she began to feel better about everything. Everything. She was no longer so upset over everything like she had been, because when you're grateful, you have this reservoir of God's peace and power in you. If you're truly grateful, not just for things or not on a superficial level, but truly grateful.
Yeah, put your focus on the right thing.
Yes.
I mean, she soon found that she was even grateful to the person who she blew up at, whose idea was accepted instead of hers. And she went and apologized. She wrote a letter to this person apologizing for blowing up at this meeting. And telling her that she, really appreciated her. And it healed their relationship. Big time. Huge. So everything in her life got straightened out as a result of writing a gratitude list. Three things every day at the end of the day. And all the doctor had given her was a blank book with all these pages to write on.
It's true. We've heard these stories before, but it's I rejoice anytime I see it. It said after her name was Serena, after she felt she wrote that letter of apology, she said she felt a lightness she hadn't experienced in weeks and even in years. She confessed her sin, so to speak, was truly sorry for it, and it lifted her. We know we can't go on and on and on with all these resentments in this. You think you're hiding them. Well, you don't hide them from God. He knows. It says in the article, this lightness came from genuine contentment. A study published in 2005 showed that writing thank you letters increased participants' happiness by 10% mm-hmm. and reduced their depressive symptoms by 35%. Mm-hmm. These feelings were sustained up to 6 months after writing the letter, highlighting the powerful effect of this gesture. And then it goes on that Serena, that was her name, her bouts of anger that used to dominate her days were less frequent, almost non-existent. In their place, moments of genuine happiness began to emerge. And it shows all the benefits of gratitude. It lists them. Improved physical health, improved sleep, improved psychological health, increases empathy, reduces stress, better social connection, improves mental strength, improves immunity. Many symptoms, diseases, and disorders plague our modern society. At the forefront is lack of sleep, quantity, and quality. Gratitude can alleviate these side effects by improving sleep. Additionally, those who practice gratitude journaling experience less pain, with nearly 8% decrease, and are more inclined to exercise. When you're grateful, your body feels it, and you're not going to, when you think all these painful, hateful thoughts, it'll be seeming to be take place in your body. But when you're grateful to God and see the good and love, your body can't be in pain. How could it be? Gratitude can significantly lower stress levels. This in turn benefits mental and physical health. And then this I found almost amusing. I mean, all of us can identify. It was called the comparison trap. Gratitude transforms how we interact with the world. It shifts our focus from what we lack to what we have. Let me illustrate with a parable. A man rode his old bicycle through the city, feeling dissatisfied. He noticed a shiny new car driving past and thought, if only I had a car like that instead of this bicycle. Inside the car, the driver was stressed about loan payments. Seeing the cyclist, he thought, I wish I could be carefree like that cyclist without these financial burdens. At a nearby bus stop, a person waited, watching the car and bicycle pass. They thought, I wish I had a bicycle or a car. It would be much more convenient than waiting for this bus. Down the road, a person in a wheelchair observed the cyclist, the car, and the bus stop commuter, and they thought, how I wish I could stand and walk, even just to wait at a bus stop, ride a bicycle, or drive a car. Finally, in a hospital room overlooking the street, an ill patient lay in bed gazing out the window, and he thought, I'd give anything to be out there, even in a wheelchair, just to feel the sun and breathe the fresh air again. You get the point. How silly we humans are. Instead of just being content and grateful with what we have, instead of comparing and thinking somebody's better, and they're probably thinking the exact opposite. So this makes wonderful points in a very good way, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I love the fact that it is... because what does Mrs. Eddy say? Our medicine is safe and effective and perfect in its potence of his own qualities. So, all right, now we're going to end with a beautiful article, again, given by Carrie.
This is an article entitled The Life-Giving Voice by Irving C. Tomlinson, and it's a 1915 issue of the Sentinel. And he writes, the vital message given in the fifth chapter of John, the dead shall hear the voice of the Son of God, and they that hear shall live, is a prophecy which was proved true when the dead did hear and heed the voice of Jesus. The widow's son and Lazarus caught the Master's words and arose from the dream of death to life and activity. those dead in trespasses and sins were awakened. The publican and the Magdalene heard the divine message and experienced a resurrection to truer, better living. Even so today, the healing truth contained in the Bible and interpreted by the Christian Science textbook, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures by Mrs. Eddy, is discerned by those morally and spiritually dead, and it uplifts them into useful, helpful, joyous living. The needed condition for the restoration of those who are deadened to health and peace is simply that the voice of truth be heard and assimilated. The action of truth upon the unawakened is like the raising of a curtain to let in the sunshine when the darkness necessarily vanishes. So to the open ear and receptive heart of the needy comes the stimulating and corrective voice of truth. And the work of banishing the darkness of error is silently but surely accomplished. The psalmist says of God, "He spake and it was done." That is to say, the spiritual universe, including man, is the speech, the word of divine mind, eternal truth, the one omnipotent God. Because the utterance of the Father is clear, distinct, and powerful, so the voice of the true man is spiritual, truthful, and loving. When a son of God so speaks, those apparently dead to truth hear his voice and live.
Thank you all so much for joining us today.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.